Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. The political season is heating up, even though we haven't reached the traditional time when most people, non-political junkies, tune in. That's Labor Day. We thought we'd jump the gun and continue our series of political discussions with political commentators, Deseret News columnists Frank Pignanelli and LeVar Webb, especially on the occasion of Mitt Romney announcing his vice presidential running mate over the weekend.
And you can participate in this conversation if you email us at upraccess@gmail.com. The comments will be read after the air of this interview.
A pick hailed, interestingly enough, by both the Republicans and Democrats. Republicans think that this delineates a very clear distinction between the two campaigns. Democrats believe they have some ammunition against Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan. We welcome in Frank Pignanelli and LeVar Webb. Well, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Let me start with LeVar Webb. What do you think of the pick?
Well, I like it as a kind of a mainstream Republican. I think it refocuses the campaign on issues rather than a lot of negative campaigning, and it presents a contrast between the two candidates and vice presidents, and so I think it was really a good pick. It's obviously going to be hotly contested, and it does thrust entitlement issues right into the forefront of the campaign.
Frank Pignanelli, your overall reaction?
Well, I also, like you said, for a couple reasons. One is that it is nice that someone substantive, and whether you like him or not, Congressman Ryan, the substantive person, has been chosen. So it says a lot. You know, you hear a lot, especially from conservatives, decrying the system, and the system's working fine because someone like Paul Ryan, who he is because of good thought process on his, you know, and you may not agree with everything, but at least there's substance to him. The second thing is that the Republicans better be ready for the onslaught that's going to happen, especially in those states that have high percentages of the elderly population, because of his controversial proposals, like them or not, they are controversial. There's going to be a number of attack ads on that. I think the other thing that's very interesting, in the recent weeks, even leading up to the decision, there's a lot of quarters inside conservative camps were very upset with Governor Romney for not staking a claim as to who he was and what he believed in. I believe he had to do something like this Paul Ryan pick to shore that up, and that does. That shores it up. Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because even as last night on 60 Minutes, when he said, well, I have the Romney plan, not the Ryan plan. So you're going to have to start avoiding that confusion. Otherwise, a lot of the advantages will be lost.
LeVar Webb, is that going to be a problem? Paul Ryan is identified with a very specific set of ideas. In fact, you know, he came out with the Republican budget. Is Romney going to be able to differentiate that and walk that line?
I think they will be able to do that. Romney has adopted a lot of what Paul Ryan was recommending, not 100%. There are some differences, but certainly you would expect that, and I think voters will be willing to acknowledge the fact that Romney is the presidential candidate, and it will be his plan, not the Ryan plan. But certainly Paul Ryan and intellectually has contributed dramatically do that plan, and they'll be able to defend it together. And Ryan is very articulate on these issues. The success will really be determined by how well they are able to communicate exactly what it is. The Democrats will say, "Well, it's throwing Grandma off the cliff," and the Republicans are really going to have to be able to communicate effectively what it really is, or they won't be successful.
And Mr. Webb, just a follow-up to that before we go to Mr. Pignanelli. You mentioned entitlement issues are thrust to the center. Of course, Romney had to realize that'd be happening. This is on purpose, I would assume. Do you think that plays well for the Republicans?
It's certainly a gamble. Entitlements has been something that both parties traditionally have stayed away from. Neither party has wanted to address them, and they haven't done anything substantively in Congress to address them, and they haven't wanted to make it a campaign issue. President Obama has not truly recommended any real solutions to the entitlement issues. Paul Ryan has, and he has laid out a very clear plan, and Romney has adopted most of that plan. And so now it is going to become an issue. What they need to say, obviously, is that Medicare, if we leave it alone, is going to go away. I mean, it will go broke. And so we have to deal with it. We're willing to deal with it. The other campaign is not willing to deal with it.
Frank Pignanelli, do you think these entitlement issues front and center plays well for Romney?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it helps if he could talk about bringing some restructuring to the entitlement program so that they're safe and sound. The problem is that it's so hard to wade into those waters without getting just all the political demons coming out. I mean, Ronald Reagan tried it. In fact, George W. Bush even said that Ryan's plan with a proposal on Social Security was irresponsible. It's very difficult to do. And what's interesting, Ryan's been out there for a long time. It's only been recently that a lot of Republicans have settled up to him. A lot of it because they figured that maybe they own their best shot or something concrete. It is really messaging, and you have to be out there saying, this is what we need to do, this is why you're still protected. And I got to be honest, Ryan may be the only person out there so far, but I've yet to see one that's really done a great job of leading the country into true entitlement reform. Neither party, and very few leaders, have actually really articulated a great message on that.
LeVar Webb, I wonder how much weight a vice presidential pick at the end of the day has. I saw in a tweet, I think it was, from Ari Fleischer, kind of summarized one point of view. He said the three stages of the Ryan pick, if I'm remembering this correctly, first, Republicans rally, second, Democrats throw the kitchen sink, third, the focus goes back to Obama and Romney.
Yes, I think that's accurate. Clearly, in the past, vice presidential picks haven't made a big difference in the election. They often haven't even carried their own home state. Clearly, Romney hopes that this will help him win Wisconsin. This may be a little bit different, though, because it does thrust these issues into the forefront of the race, where previous picks have been based on geography, how does this help me geographically and so forth. But this really does inject important issues into the campaign. So it may be that this pick may be more important and have more of an impact, but I think it's absolutely correct that the focus will return back to Romney and Obama.
And that's, in my opinion, that's absolutely correct for a couple reasons. One is that while Ryan will help Romney shore him up on a conservative basis, at the end of the day, it's the presidential pick. The other thing is that if you notice the Democratic attacks, they're attacking the plan, but they're not attacking Congressman Ryan. The reason why is Congressman Ryan is a hell of a likable guy. He has that aw shucks attitude, and so you cannot demonize him personally, and the Democrats know that. But the guy that you can spend all day beating the hell out of is Mitt Romney, and he just keeps on coming up with reasons to do that. And so I think Democrats know that their fertile ground is just to keep on going after Romney, and that's why it's going to return too.
LeVar Webb, some Republicans are urging Mitt Romney to embrace Bain Capital and make the case for, creation of wealth and opportunity, which after all are some of the attractive planks of the Republican point of view.
Well, he's done that to some degree, but I certainly agree that he hasn't done it very effectively, and I think they could have done it much more effectively. I mean, what we're talking about here is capitalism, and he has been very successful in the free market system, and certainly not every company that he has invested in or taken over has been successful, but most of them have, and he's created more jobs than have been lost, and he's and they have not defended that very well. So they could do a better job of that. Now, I assume the Democrats will continue to hammer on that issue because it has been somewhat effective for them. So the Romney campaign can certainly do a better job at defending him.
What do you think on that question, Frank Pignanelli?
Well, and you're right. Oftentimes, when you embrace your past, the issue goes away. And he's for whatever reason, Romney just stumbles on that. He stumbles on his health care program. and whatever, and he's just unable to articulate why he has done something. I agree. If he had said, look, this is capitalism, and there's ups and downs, and this is what happens, and just became a strong defender of that, the issue wouldn't entirely go away, but it becomes a side issue. But because he is so flustered all the time in defending it, you know, the vultures smell blood, and they're going after it.
Yeah, I don't think the Democratic ad accusing him essentially of, you know, causing this woman's death, of a laid-off worker, you know, I don't know that that's – I think that was over the top, and I think it's been fairly well disputed. I mean, a lot of the things that happened were 5 years well after Romney was out of the picture, and so to blame Romney for – that, I think, was over the top, and I think most people see through that, but still the issue does persist.
Oh, yeah, it was over the top. But you know, but what's hilarious about that is, how, again, look how Romney responded. One of his people goes out there and says, well, if this family had been in Massachusetts, they've been taken care of under Romney's care, which brought the whole house down with the conservative side. Again, he is unable to defend himself, he and his staff, because they don't have a clear, concise message of who they are. And so that ad was over the top, but look what happened. Again, what should have been just people saying this is wrong with what the super PAC is doing, that's not affiliated with Obama, instead it all of a sudden turns on, well, look how poorly that the Romney camp is in their confusion trying to respond to it.
If you just joined us, we are talking politics. Obviously, the pick of Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan to be vice presidential running mate with Mitt Romney has occasioned another round of political discussion. We'll talk about congressional and legislative races in Utah as well as the season heats up as we leave summer soon and head into the fall, looking toward the November elections. And we're talking with Deseret News columnists LeVar Webb and Frank Pignanelli. I wonder, starting with Frank Pignanelli, if you'd handicap the race for us. What are the critical states that either candidate has to win, and who do you think will win?
Well, you look at, now this is all the pre-Ryan stuff, and you look at, there's about 12 swing states that are up for grabs, and in a lot of those, Obama is ahead. And you look at a lot of the analysis of the different polls up until the Ryan pick, and I'm not saying Ryan pick is going to change that. Obama is still ahead anywhere from 5 to 10% when we look at it. And a lot of it is the likability quotient. That's really where it's coming down to, is the, we have a majority of Americans disagree with the country's going economically. They don't always blame Obama for that, but they just do not like Romney, and they don't trust him. And so that's where it's coming down to. And unless he can change that, I just don't see that figure happening to move much.
Before I go to Mr. Webb for this question, Mr. Pignanelli, 8% unemployment, that's got to be a problem for an incumbent, doesn't it?
Oh, it is. Look at this race is all about Romney's inability to connect with America. You look at the GDP and things like that, although it's starting to come back, Obama should be completely just out of it, but he's not, and he's not for a couple reasons. One, Obama's well-liked. Two, a lot of Americans believe that he inherited a real problem, and while he may have made all the wise choices, at least tried to do it, and they feel like he's a good, decent person doing the best he can. While they may respect Romney's business acumen, they don't like him. And I know he's loved in the state, but they don't like him in the other 49, and that's a real problem. And if you look at the modern history of the presidency, for the most part, the men who are at the top of the ticket that are well-liked, that the person you want to have dinner with or have a beer with, they're the ones that win. Americans are very personal in their choice for president. And boy, they want to be able to like the person who they're going to be listening to for the next 4 years.
Mr. Webb, do you agree with that analysis?
Well, somewhat. I still, when people ask me where I think it's going, I say it's still 50-50, and you can make a case for either side, you know, quite easily. On one hand, as Frank has laid out, the Democrats feel really pretty darn good because they have a terrible economy and 8% unemployment and so forth, and yet they're a little bit ahead. On the other hand, the Republicans are saying, well, we're running against a popular incumbent. It's always tough for a challenger. The Obama has just been hammering us with negative ads now for months. And yet, we're still within the margin of error in most cases. We're within striking distance. And they will also say, we've got a lot of money saved up for the final 2 months, and we're gonna, so we will be well-funded. The undecided, and there are very few undecided left. You know, most people are making up their minds quickly, but they'll tend to break for us. And so here we are running against an incumbent, and we're in pretty darn good place. So it's all going to come down to these next 2 months, and it'll be fun to watch.
What's interesting, let's be decisive in this race, and this is where LeVar and I really deeply disagree, and that's the Electoral College. You know, I think it should be abolished, as we wrote about on Sunday, and LeVar wants to keep it. But see, what everyone's looking at is these national numbers, and they don't mean anything. It's what's happening in the Electoral College. And right now, the path to victory for Obama is much easier in the Electoral College of the states. And so that's when you start looking and breaking it down. It's like, well, Romney has a heck of a road to climb and all that. And so that's now, having said all that, I think we would all have to, all the political pundits will all agree, a lot's going to depend upon what happens in early October in that first debate, because this is either 1980 or this is 2004, where you have an unpopular incumbent and you have a challenger that's little distrusted by the population. Ronald Reagan, you know, hit it out of the park in the debate. Romney could do that, or it could be just like John Kerry. They were not comfortable with Kerry, no matter how much they disliked George Bush and reelected the incumbent.
LeVar Webb, what do you think's likely to happen in that debate? Do you think Romney maybe clears the hurdle?
The debates will be very important, and I don't expect either candidate to. I mean, who knows what'll happen? But I don't. It's likely that neither candidate will really throw a knockout punch. Romney, you know, has been criticized for months as not being the most exciting guy in the world, but. And all of those debates, and gosh, how many did they have? 25, or I mean, it was a crazy number during the primaries. He actually came out of them pretty well, and there were most debates. He was viewed as having held his own or having won, and so he's been through it. And Romney or Obama is very articulate; will do a good job as well. So it could be a more of a standoff, or one or the other doing a little bit better. I'll be surprised if there's just a real dramatic kind of a knockout punch.
If you just joined us, we are talking politics with Deseret News columnists Frank Pignanelli and LeVar Webb. And this conversation for another 10 minutes or so. On the occasion of the vice presidential pick, we learned over the weekend Mitt Romney has picked Wisconsin Republican Congressman Paul Ryan.
It'll also be fun to watch that vice presidential debate.
Yes, that should be a good one. a couple of pretty good debaters there, I would think. The vice president and Representative Ryan. I'd like maybe each of you to follow up. Mr. Pignanelli made reference to the Electoral College debate, a vigorous debate in the Deseret News. Mr. Pignanelli even likening the Electoral College to Mr. Webb. Got a little personal there. Mr. Pignanelli, why should we abolish the Electoral College?
Well, every Utahn should just be upset about the Electoral College because once again we're being left out. Utah is one of those states because we usually choose Republican presidents. We're off the chart of anyone's attention, but that also goes for Texas and California, and it just is not fair to those states they may have abundant of one. Particular party, but they should be got to get the attention of the presidential candidates. Secondly, what's happening because of that Electoral College, they're focused on about a million voters is all. You have almost $2 billion are focused on about a million voters who are swing voters. And I'm not, you know what, some of them are not always the best and brightest either, too. They're not engaged in the political process. And it just, because of the quirkiness of the Electoral College, it's warped that whole system. It was a compromise, just like a lot of the things in the Constitution that we've moved away from, and we need to move away from that. So it really truly is a national election. The states' rights are protected in the Senate, and this should be more of a national election so that you can have the discussions about entitlement reform and things like that without having to worry about senior citizens in Florida and things like that.
Mr. Webb, let me preface your answer this way. While I am grateful that we don't have the onslaught of ads in Utah, I've seen only a couple of ads, and I'm grateful for that. It does seem like, you know, that our five electoral votes don't matter. They're foregone conclusion. Isn't it a problem that we're focusing this election on only about a million people?
Well, it's not that they don't matter, because they do matter a great deal. They matter just as much as any other votes. I mean, they are included in the tally. But I don't feel left out at all in Utah, because essentially we have made our decision. We in Utah were mostly Republicans and conservatives, and we know the candidate that we will support, and he knows, and so he expects to get those votes. And so we agree with his values, and he agrees with ours. And so we have made our selection, and it would be a waste of time for him to spend ad dollars and so forth in Utah. The thing that the Electoral College does, it does protect states' rights. It does force candidates to look at the country not just by big demographic groups or by big population centers. And if we didn't have the Electoral College, then they would just figure out, you know, they would just target their ads by demographic group and focus in the big population center, certainly not in Utah. But it forces candidates to look state by state. What are the issues in that state that I need to address in order to be successful? It gives states as a state more clout than simply as a bunch of people. And we do have small states like Nevada and Colorado, which are more swing states, where they do pay attention and they do care about those issues. And our candidate cares about our issues, and that's why we support him. So I don't think we have to feel left out. Those states that aren't getting the attention, they aren't because they know their candidate, they support that candidate, that candidate reflects their values, and so they do count, and their wishes are being met in the candidate that they will support.
Mr. Pignanelli, if we abolish the Electoral College, isn't it likely that candidates will spend all their time in New York and Los Angeles and Chicago and ignore the rural areas?
Well, they're not in New York and California now, because all the Republicans in California and New York are being ignored at this point. Yes and no. They'll hit those media markets, obviously. But, for example, there was an Electoral College. Romney would be spending some time in Utah because he'd want to ramp up the vote here to counterbalance where he would be in other states. The thing about it is that what the hope had been is that there would be a coalition of states who would elect these electors, and then they could then choose the president. That has not happened. The founder's vision has not occurred. There's no coalition with Utah and Vermont and other states. And so, yes, you would have to reach out to the mega centers, but they'd have to build a coalition of demographic population centers. They'd have to reach out and say, okay, what are the issues that are going to bind these different population centers, the rurals, you know, and maybe it's the Midwest and portions of the Northeast, instead of focusing on counties within a state so they can win that state. So that's why we have these stupid ethanol subsidies and things like that, is because they're focused on these very specific little corners of the state, not even the whole state, just specific corners, so they could tilt the balance because it's winner-take-all. If we went towards where they could build broad coalitions, then you could, like I said, you could have a president who could speak to the broader issues of entitlement reform and things like that, because there'd be a national support for it.
I want to maybe one more question on the national races, then turn to the state races. One thing that, I don't know, seems to have disappeared, it got a lot of press and it now seems to disappear, that's the Mormon question. Although the Mormon and the Catholic now on the ticket, something might reappear. LeVar Webb, what do you make of this? Do you think that particular issue will reheat?
I don't think it will, unless there are some really nasty, nefarious Democrats that try to raise it as a negative, and that's certainly possible. But it has retreated because the evangelicals have decided in the Republican base that they'd much rather vote for a Mormon Republican than President Obama, and so it's kind of flown out the window. And I do think that now that Romney has selected Ryan, a devout Catholic, that sort of broadens his base a little bit more. It's not just the Mormon there. And I don't think we'll see much focus on that question again unless someone really does try to raise it in some kind of a real negative way.
Mr. Pignanelli.
It's actually been very heartwarming to see that that's become almost a non-issue. The evangelicals are, you know, they're obviously united because they don't like Obama. I do worry that should Romney get a lot closer or even come ahead, pull ahead in the polls, let's say after the convention, you might see some not at all associated with the Obama campaign, but some nasty stuff coming out of other places in the country trying to hit on his religion or some of the more interesting elements of LDS doctrine, or let me maybe make up stuff. I do have that fear and worry, and hopefully it doesn't happen.
Turning to the congressional races, is there, Mr. Webb, first this question for you. Is there a particular race that's caught your attention?
Well, clearly the Mia Love-Jim Matheson race is the one to watch, the most interesting and will probably be the closest. And the latest polls have shown Matheson well ahead with Mia Love, quite a ways behind. But that race really hasn't started yet, at least in the general public. And I do think that Mia Love has had a hard time developing an effective campaign, and the Republican Party has kind of stepped in and is helping out there. So that'll be the one to watch. I think that's still going to be very close. I think she still has a chance of winning. I think she'll be well-funded with a lot of national money, but she clearly isn't very well-known yet. Name ID is low in the district, and Jim Matheson has been around for many, many years and many races, and so she's the underdog and has a bit of an uphill climb.
Mr. Pignanelli, your view of this race.
We keep on getting reports. When I say we, I think Lee LeVar gets them, and I get them other sectors, that while Mia Love is garnering a lot of money and support, especially from national sources, the campaign still has some disorganization. They brought in some good people, Brian Summers from who used to work in Herbert's office, and some other folks to run it, and a lot of it's been run out of the state party headquarters, which will be helpful. But we're still picking that up. We're still the reports of different appointments, to like Sean Hannity and other stuff being dropped. And so what that means is if she's going to prevail against someone like Jim Matheson, who is organized, who is focused, who does raise money, she's going to have to come up a lot farther in terms of organization and messaging. Because otherwise, I mean, there's no better campaigner than Jim Matheson.
I want to ask about tone. That's an issue being raised by a couple of Democrats. Jay Siegmiller invited Republican delegates to a breakfast. He decries the shrill voices, quoting from his press release, that characterize a lot of the political debate these days. Scott Howell, running for Senate, is trying to make this an issue. The U.S. Senate is just incivil, he says. Frank Pignanelli, do you think that's going to have traction?
Oh, I think a lot of people are very concerned, and the paper that LeVar and I write for are very concerned about civil dialogue, and there is some uncivil dialogue in the political sector. But I look at things historically, and you know, things were much nicer in the 60s and 70s, but they were a lot rougher. They were a lot rougher in our country's history. So I think part of the so-called uncivil dialogue is just because there's so many news channels and so many news sources out there, whether it's on cable television, the internet, or whatever, and you have some very responsible people, but you have a lot of people on the internet that just love to go for the shrill, and they get the attention. And so I think it's more, there's that aspect. The other aspect is we're having a fundamental discussion in this country as to the role of government. And while there's always room for compromise, it's a big debate, it's a big discussion, and it's going to generate a lot of passion. And I just don't see how, in some ways, some people could be nice about it and not personalize it. But I think it's important we have the emotion, passion to these important arguments.
LeVar Webb, do you think this is something people are worrying about, or do you think this is just something that will not gain any traction?
I think it is a concern for a lot of people, but I don't think it will be necessarily a winning platform plank for the Democrats. The Democrats have recruited some pretty mainstream moderate candidates, and they're having a hard time getting their messages out there because Utah is such a Republican-dominated state. And so they're trying to appeal to moderates and moderate Republicans and independents by saying, you know, send me back to Washington or send me to the governor's office, and I will be a bridge builder and I will bring people together and we'll get things done instead of fighting. And they also are running to some extent against the far right of the Republican Party, saying that the Republican Party has been captured and some of the Republican candidates and incumbents have been captured by the far right. So they're making that appeal to the middle, and it's a reasonably good strategy. It's just so hard for even a moderate Democrat to win in Utah.
LeVar Webb, one of the recent columns from you and Mr. Pignanelli looked ahead to the 2013 legislative session based on who might win, and there might be a kind of a different makeup in the 2013 session. One of these suppositions is that a number of very conservative state legislators sought other offices, retired, or were defeated. Do you think the 2013 legislative legislature is going to look a lot different from the 2012?
Well, I might be naive and Pollyanna-y about this, but I actually have some hope that this will be a more mainstream session, and a lot of the far right legislators are gone. Either they ran for another office or were defeated. And one of the concerns I have is that the more mainstream legislators will not remember that they have actually won, and because the far right is still going to be there, and they're going to be very noisy and very vocal, and they're going to say, you know, we may have lost in 2012, but we're going to come back strong in 2014, and so they may still be kind of afraid of the far right rather than saying, hey, you know, the moderates won this election, so let's govern, let's get some problems solved in this state, and let's do some good things instead of always looking over their shoulder at the far right.
Mr. Pignanelli, do you think there'll be significant changes in the next legislature?
No, I've served and I have lobbied for a long time, and it's the nature of the delegate system and the nature of the beast in Utah, which is there's going to be some very conservative legislators. A lot of the sources of conservative thought, whether it's the when I was there, it was the Cowboy Caucus. Most recently, it was the you had these other conservative caucuses, and the legislators are the ones that do this. And so I think that's going to maybe they'll call it something else starting in 2013. But what happens is they're sensitive to all the delegates and to the local elected officials in the more conservative ranks of the Republican Party. And I think you're going to see similar to, like you've had for the last 30 years. This will be very much the same.
We're talking with Deseret News columnists Frank Pignanelli and LeVar Webb. We have about 5 minutes left in this conversation, talking about politics, and we have moved to politics within the state of Utah now. I wonder, starting with Mr. Pignanelli, what you make over the kerfuffle recently with the Outdoor Retailer Show. Is this just a tempest in a teapot, or are message bills, so-called, and Governor Herbert's embracement of those endangering an economic boon here?
Well, this just shows you different. We had this before, and we had it when I was in the legislature, and then we had it. Governor Leavitt was able to smooth that over, saying, yes, these are some issues, but at the same time reach out to you. And hopefully Governor Herbert can mirror what Governor Leavitt was able to do. Governor Leavitt kind of had that calming influence on these issues. And that's one of the problems with message legislation is that, you can have all your fun that you want, but it does have ramifications. I do think at the end of the day that the outdoor retailers will make their decision based upon economics and space, not necessarily what happens at the legislature, but it does say, look, you may have issues with the federal government, you may want a public lands policy, but how you handle this will have impact upon tourism and things like that. So please remember that for those 6 weeks while you're up at Capitol Hill. Please remember that, Governor, so that you can, when you foster, you can still, if you want to, attack the feds, but be cognizant of what others are thinking too, so that way you don't feel like that somehow they are evil stepchildren if they have any differences on that policy.
Mr. Webb, let me preface this, get your answer, but you wrote in a recent column that one man's message bill is another man's sound legislation, but something like this, do you think it could cost the state of Utah?
I do think it needs to be communicated carefully, and the big symbol there, of course, is the legislation that demanded the federal government turn its land back, turn over the land to Utah. Not necessarily back to Utah because we didn't ever really have it, but But there's less to that than really meets the eye. And Governor Herbert and Lieutenant Governor Bell are, you know, they're really pretty mainstream folks on this issue. And I sympathize. I do think a big disadvantage Utah has is the amount of federal land in the state, far, far, far more than most states. And so that hurts our tax base for education and so forth. But Governor Herbert is not proposing, and he did sign that legislation, but he's not proposing that every iota of federal land be turned back to the state and turned to the state. Certainly national parks and many Forest Service areas and wilderness, you know, we wouldn't be talking about touching that. There are lands that could be effectively traded. We could block up the school trust lands that are scattered all over the state in federal land. And there's a lot of really dramatic improvements we could make in land policy. And I think that's where the Herbert administration wants to go. They're not contemplating or anticipating, and I think both legally and legislatively in Congress, you know, that's not going to happen. But there are lots of improvements we could make in land policy and give the state a stronger tax base and improve that situation.
And if that was the message coming out, I think we'd better stop. Unfortunately, it does get lost in the turmoil. There are some legitimate issues there, but it comes across as this very strident, and so it scares some of these retailers who make a living off of, you know, obviously, the outdoor experience.
We're just about out of time. I want to treat one last issue. Start with Mr. Webb on this. The ALEC came to Salt Lake City, American Legislative Exchange Council, controversial group in some eyes, very useful resource in other minds. I wonder what your overall view of ALEC is.
Well, we did write about this as well, and I'm not afraid of ALEC at all. I think it's a good organization. Again, a lot of this is more symbolic than anything else. I mean, there are all kinds of organizations and groups that try to influence state legislators, and the reason the liberals and the more radical environmentalists are concerned about ALEC is it is very effective. Conservative Republican legislators around the country have gotten together in this organization, and they do make plans, and they do look at legislation and recommend legislation. They do some of it behind closed doors, and there are certainly corporations that make contributions to these organizations, just as some corporations make contributions to very liberal groups. The reason they're being attacked is they really are very effective. They do a good job of it, but ultimately, everything that comes out of ALEC has to go before committees and floor debates and so forth. No legislation is passed in secret, and I think there are a lot of very fine legislators that are leading ALEC, and ALEC doesn't concern me.
Mr. Pignanelli, your view of ALEC?
It's it's like anything else. If you do anything in secret, no matter how open you are, that's what blemishes you. And there have been ALEC meetings in secret. Who knows what goes on? They're probably nothing, but it's all boring. But the Utah legislators who are leaders of the organization caught on to that, especially Senator Bramble and Senator Niederhauser, and said, look, open up the meetings, because whatever is going on, there's not worth all the heat that we're taking, because what was happening is that the corporate sponsors of this were getting heat from these liberal organizations saying that, you know, if you do contribute to ALEC, we're going to make noises in your customer markets. And so a lot of corporations are saying, look, we can't defend the practice of having these meetings that may ultimately end up legislation in secret. So I think if they open it up, that diffuses a lot of it. There's a lot of different organizations where legislators meet and things like that. This is a group that's comprised primarily of conservative legislators, and so it's going to attract a lot of attention. I do think what's going to happen, though, with those, and there are organizations of liberal legislators, they're going to start receiving attention on the other end, too. So as I wrote in the column, there's now a new front in the partisan war.
We'll leave there out of time. We've been talking with Deseret News columnist Frank Pignanelli and LeVar Webb. You can read their very fine column regularly in the Deseret News. Frank Pignanelli, LeVar Webb, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Access Utah. Tom Williams with you. And just a programming note here, the interview at this time, which we previously announced, we're going to move to tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in tomorrow for a conversation on tourism, its economic impact. That's from the recent Utah Rural Summit with Lee Von Der Esch, Managing Director of Utah Office of Tourism, and Maria Twitchell, Executive Director of the Cedar City Brian Head Tourism Bureau. And coming up, it's a Steve Eaton commentary. Much more to come on Access Utah.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
What we've done is take biomimicry to the system level to take one tree and multiple trees and create the urban forest.
I'm Neil Harvey. Our guest this week will be Tree People founder Andy Lipkus. It's Upscaling Goodness, Tree Huggers, Earth Acupuncture, and Community Forests on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Thursday morning at 10 and evening at 8:30.
We'll head north on the next Putumayo World Music Hour and visit the largest French-speaking region outside of France itself, Quebec. I'm Rosalie Howarth. Join me for Quebec, the next Putumayo World Music Hour.
Friday night at 11 on Utah Public Radio.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by Cafe Ibis, a coffee roasting company with a focus on sustainability for people and planet through certified organic, fair trade, and Smithsonian bird-friendly shade-grown coffees. Ordering and location information is at cafeibis.com.
Just this week, after a surprise drop-in visit from my boss's boss, I came to a very scary and disturbing understanding.
Deseret News columnist Steve Eaton.
As I reviewed the encounter in my mind, I realized that under the stress of it all, several things I said came out of my mouth completely missing any of the mental filters I have in place to keep myself out of court and trouble. I was literally hearing things directly from my mouth for the very first time as I spoke them. It was like I was an observer, unable to stop someone else from saying something stupid about me. While this may prove entertaining to others, it's not helpful to me vocationally. This would not be a problem if, like some idiot savant, I was offering remarkable insight that could impress and amaze my boss. Instead, I heard myself asking if I could take credit for all of his accomplishments after he died. Now, I know for a fact that I did not consciously strategize that if he ever came back to my office, I would immediately suggest he die and let me take credit for his accomplishments. It just flew out of my mouth, wild and free, like an out-of-control skunk on a water slide. If my mouth has this much independent power, it just makes me think I should be very careful about what I think about. What if I were suddenly to blurt out something about wishing I had married Marianne from Gilligan's Island when I was a teenager, or just started suddenly rambling on about the need to develop a diet pill that would help me lose weight by making me extremely tall? No wonder they don't invite me to sit at the head table anymore. Despite the verbal stupidity, I know the encounter with this high-ranking person in my life could have and has gone worse. On at least three separate occasions when I have discovered this boss suddenly standing next to my desk, I have simply turned and screamed at him as if he were an executive zombie or an alien CEO. This has never been a good way to start a professional office encounter, and it might explain why I have been given a new special office in the basement. It's clear that even under serious stress, sometimes my mouth won't stay on message. However, sometimes I don't even need to be stressed to have my mouth go rogue. Once I was working at a big company where an attorney, who was a friend of mine, was known for scaring people to death with stories about how easy it is to get a sexual harassment lawsuit filed against you. She prompted this paranoia in little seminars. It was like a thankless job, and I wanted to pay her a compliment so she would know her work had been effective. You know, Janice, every time I think of having an inappropriate relationship with another woman, I think of you, I probably told her over lunch in the company cafeteria. Normally unflappable, she buried her face in her hands and said, "Steve, that is wrong on oh so many levels." Thankfully, she didn't sue me. 2 weeks ago, I visited another church and was asked to introduce myself. Before I knew what was happening, I stood up and said, "I'm just going to be here a few weeks until the sentencing, and then I'll be gone for 5 or 6 years, and then I'll be back." At least I didn't mention Marianne. My mouth has even been able to spontaneously orchestrate statements that involve the cooperation of my hands. Once, when my sister brought over an important boy to our house, who we knew she was not supposed to marry, I found myself acting out my own little impromptu drama. In the middle of the meal, I looked down at my hand as if I was hiding a 3x5 card just out of view below the table and said, "Mm-mm, Liz, these are wonderful mashed potatoes. What a fine cook you are. You'll make someone a wonderful wife someday." "What?" she said with a horrified look on her face, fearing yet another embarrassing prank was about to begin at exactly the wrong moment. My little brother Rob picked up the ball by immediately looking down at his hand and said, as if reading carefully, "Yes, Liz, you're quite a cook. Any guy who marries you will be lucky indeed." "Dad, tell them to stop it," she said, pleading with my father, who also seemed surprised by the scripted outburst. Then my father, to the horror of my sister, looked at his hand and said, as if reading, "It is true, my daughter, you have always been such a lovely person. You make delicious peas and carrots. You are certainly someone who will be married soon." In this case, it proved a good thing because it helped my sister marry the right guy. It just took her a few years for her to see how much we had helped her out. I guess in some ways the ability to talk without activating any brain cells is like a mild superpower. It appears both Mitt Romney and President Barack Obama have this skill to some extent, and it seems clear that there are others in Washington, D.C. who have nearly perfected it. I would prefer not to have this gift at all, however. I've considered just abruptly screaming at anyone who chooses to speak with me as if my foot is on fire, but I'm not sure that would help me vocationally or socially. There must be a way to harness my superpower for good. What kind of job could I have where I could just say whatever came to my mind with no filters? For now, I feel like I'm just biding my time, waiting for the next gaffe to come out of my mouth. And I hate that. "Hey, I wonder if Mitt Romney would reconsider his VP pick. That guy he picked, he seems too smart." This is Steve Eaton.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper. This week, it's homemade Nutella, Stump the Cook with Ted Allen, the host of Chopped, and remembering Julia Child on her 100th birthday. That's this week on The Splendid Table from 8 p.m.
Tune in Tuesday morning at 10 here on Utah Public Radio.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1, 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1, 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1, 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1, 91.5 Logan.